It's time to go. I looked at him carefully. How do I pick you up? He probably wouldn't like me leaving greasy fingerprints on his shiny chrome. It doesn't matter. Stick me in a pocket for now. We need to move. A dodo landed and the hamsters have unloaded the cargo. It's being prepped for return to orbit. There are only 22 Ruhar at this base right now, including the dodo crew. I've locked 12 Ruhar in buildings where they can't get out. The dodo controls are disabled, and I'm ghosting comms so the Ruhar in orbit think everything here is hunky-dory. Hunky-dory? My grandparents used to say that. Where did Skippy pick up old human slang? Weapons. Even my limited intelligence can figure that leaves plenty of hamsters I need to deal with. There was another click, and a big double set of doors at the far end popped open. Out that door, to the left, another left, and there is an armory with all the Ruhar rifles you could want. The firing controls on all other Ruhar weapons here have been fired, so nobody will be shooting at you. I believed that when I saw it. Skippy was heavy for a beer can. He sat awkwardly in my right pants pocket. Running was impossible unless I held him through the fabric. He was telling the truth. We found an armory with racks of Ruhar rifles. These all work? Yes, yes, quickly now. Take four and I'll disable the rest. There are more weapons aboard the Dodo that I've temporarily disabled. Ruhar rifles were shorter and heavier than our M4s. I couldn't carry four of them, plus Skippy. Fortunately, being an armory, the room also contained backpacks, and the hamster type of Z-phones, which I also took four of. I stuffed three rifles into a backpack, and Skippy in a side pocket with his lid peeking out the top. Safety is on the right side of the rifle. Slide it to red for active. On the left side is a setting for stun, then two settings for particle beams, both single shot and rapid fire, he explained. Ruhar body armor absorbs and dissipates the effect of stun beams, so aim for their heads. They can't shoot back. You should have plenty of time to aim. Stun setting, got it. There was no point killing hamsters. Killing would be counterproductive, as the humans staying behind on Paradise needed Ruhar help to survive. If Skippy's escape plan went south, I wanted to limit the blowback on UNEF. Where next? It would be advantageous for your three friends to help us. But first we need to get to the building where they are being held. Take a right, go straight down the hallway, last door on the left. Three Ruhar eating breakfast there. They don't know anything is wrong? Not until they try to use their weapons. The Dodo crew is running through pre-flight checks. They don't know their ship is disabled yet. It went like Skippy promised. I paused outside the door, listening to squeaky hamster chatter, triple-checking my rifle was set on stun, and the safety was off. I shrugged off the backpack and set it on the floor, took a deep breath, and dashed around the corner. Three hamsters, in uniform but with no body armor or weapons, were sitting at a table eating hamster food and drinking cups of hamster coffee. Two of them had their backs to me. I aimed at the one facing me and pulled the trigger. The stun beam was only faintly visible, but the rifle had a helpful laser targeting beam that Skippy should have told me about. Stun beams worked like a taser, was my guess. The Ruhar I shot jerked, went rigid, and slumped face forward to bang its head on the table. Switching aim, I shot another one, but the third hamster was fast. She spun to the floor and was almost behind a table when I shot her in the ass. She went down too. Warily, I approached them to check pulses. Alive. How long does this last? 3 minutes unconscious, 5 to regain full function, Skippy answered from outside the door. That wasn't long enough. I should have asked Skippy that question, or the super-intelligent being should have thought it was important for me to know. One of the hamsters had a folding knife. I used it to cut off their shirts, slice the fabric into strips and bind their wrists, ankles, and to gag their mouths. The last one was moving when I was trying to get his feet tied. Skippy, can I stun them again? A second time won't hurt. A third time could cause brain damage. To be safe, I shot them all again. Before picking up my pack, I opened closets and found a handy coil of cord to bring with me, frantically cutting it into 1 meter lengths. Getting to the building where my companions were being held involved running in the open, made easier because Skippy knew exactly where every hamster was and he was spoofing all their cameras. Three more hamsters went down with stun shots. Two of them had body armor and rifles, which they pointed at me. Nothing happened when they pulled the triggers. Puzzled and alarmed, they tried to run while checking their rifles. They didn't get far. Their body armor partly protecting them wasn't enough against my careful aim. It's easy to take the time to aim when you know the enemy can't shoot back. It was the moment when two Ruhar soldiers pointed rifles at me, completely confident in their body armor against a single human, that I first felt I could trust Skippy. Unlocking doors was one level of trick. Remotely disabling selected weapons was on an entirely different level. Maybe all that bullshit he told me wasn't entirely, you know, bullshit. Skippy unlocked the doors to the temporary cells where Adams, Desai, and Chang were imprisoned as I ran into the building, shouting for them to move. The alarm was out across the base anyway. Two hamster soldiers I'd stunned had been able to squeak something out loud before they went down. Desai was out of her cell trying to decide which way to run when she saw me, and I tossed a rifle to her. She caught it and ran after me, where we found Adams and Chang wrestling on the floor with a hamster soldier who was wearing body armor and trying to keep the two humans from taking its rifle. I put my rifle against its unarmored neck and pulled the trigger.
Shit! 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 Oh, fuck! That hurts!
Adams had caught part of the stun charge by hanging onto the hamster. She rose unsteadily to her knees, then her feet, hanging onto the wall. "It'll wear off. You all right?" I asked.
"Squared away, sir," she gasped.
"Don't use that," I told Chang, who had picked up the hamster's rifle. "It doesn't work. Use this one." I pulled a rifle from my pack. "Safety switch here, and this one controls stun and particle beam. Leave it on stun."
"Got it. What's next?"
Chang practiced using the Ruha rifle selector switches. "We jack a dodo and dust off," I explained hurriedly while binding the hamster's arms and feet. "Stun any hamster you see along the way. If we have time, tie them up with this cord. The stun effect only lasts a couple minutes." Adams explained to our two companions, who spoke excellent English but may not be current on U.S. military slang.
"We're going to steal a Ruha dropship and fly away."
"How do we do that?" Chang asked as we ran out the door right into a pair of hamster soldiers. They went down with massed stun fire, not before clearly trying to shoot at us.
"Their rifles don't work," Chang observed suspiciously.
"What is going on, Bishop?"
I noticed he didn't use my rank. You'd think getting sprung from prison twice would leave a guy a little grateful.
"How did you get out, sir?" Adams asked.
I couldn't use the excuse of the Ruha nuking the base this time. "Dodo first. Talk later." The dodo was on a landing pad, with one guard outside and one on the cargo ramp. The hamster on the ramp had its gun cradled in its arms and was punching a button to close the ramp, which wasn't moving. We took them both out. I ordered not to bother tying them up. As we charged up the ramp, we could hear the engines winding up. I wanted to ask Skippy if he was doing that. If not, the whole plan was screwed. This dodo was configured for cargo. The center was clear. Seats were folded into the walls on both sides. "No worries." The two pilots were squeaking away excitedly, working controls that didn't respond. We stunned them both, and I had Adams and Chang drag them down the ramp and clear. "Desai, you're a pilot. Take the left-hand seat." Her eyes were like saucers.
"I'm not this kind of pilot,"
she protested, waving her hand at the confusing controls.
Skippy and the Army didn't know squat about my intelligence level, because I had a totally fucking brilliant thought right then. I dug a hamster Z-phone out of my packet.
"Hacker, this is Planter. Come in, please." Skippy caught on right away.
"Hacker here. You in the dodo yet?"
"Yes, how do we fly this thing?"
"Let me talk to the pilot."
I handed the Z-phone and earpiece to Desai. Outside the cockpit window, I could see three Ruha soldiers pointing their rifles at the dodo, shaking the rifles in frustration, and pointing again. It was time to leave, before they got the idea to throw rocks in the engine intakes. I was pretty sure even Skippy couldn't shut down a rocks operating system.
"Uh-huh. Yes, I see it. Uh-huh. Yes."
"Oh, that's good," Desai exclaimed as the displays magically shifted from Ruha script to English, then Hindi.
"Got it. Trying it now."
Her hand moved a lever. The engines roared and the dodo wobbled.
"Strap in,"
she shouted. I took the right-hand seat and Adams and Chang folded down seats in the back. The ramp closed. Desai looked at me, gritted her teeth, crossed her fingers, and we lifted off. She hit the fence on the way out, scraping the bottom of the ship and snagging tree branches in the landing gear. Skippy apparently told her to cycle the gear again, and we got a green light that the gear doors were closed.
"Yes, now."
She pressed a button and lifted her hands from the controls.
"Autopilot engaged."
Chang and Adams came forward to hold on to the back of our seats.
"Where are we going?" Chang asked.
I looked at Desai, who talked to Skippy.
"Hacker says the autopilot is taking us to a UNEF supply base 300 clicks north of here."
"Who is Hacker?" Chang demanded.
"Bishop, we need to know what is going on. Why couldn't those Ruha use their rifles?"
That's Colonel Bishop to you, Lieutenant Colonel Chang. I was pissed. Not pissed at him, pissed at being caught in a lie and not having a solid way out of it. Hacker is a UNEF cyber unit. A lie. I was contacted with a plan to get us out of there. Truth. It's part of an effort to strike back at the lizards. Truth again. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I was on a roll.
The Kristang are our allies, Chang said.
Fuck that, sir, Desai shot back angrily. Chang, if you still believe the Kristang are our allies, we can drop you off somewhere. I needed to know if he was going to be a problem.
I haven't believed they are our allies since the first month we got here, Chang explained. That doesn't change the fact that we're military officers, and our chain of command takes orders from the Kristang. Or the fact that they control Earth, and that we don't have a way to get home or do anything about the Kristang when we get there.
We're working on it, I said truthfully. I don't know how much I believe this hacker, true again. What I do know is whoever it is, we got this far. Close enough to truth. The next step is we load up on supplies and some volunteers. After that, we're going to board and capture a Kristang warship.
You have got to be kidding me, sir.
Adams gave me an unbelieving look.
How do we know this hacker is...
Adams, if I told you yesterday morning that we would escape from prison twice, steal Ruha weapons, and fly off in a dodo, would you have believed me then? Have some faith. It's all we've got out here. All three of my companions were quietly grumbling as the dodo flew its programmed course to wherever we were going. We had a scare as a pair of vultures went by in the opposite direction, waggling their wings slightly in greeting. Skippy must have talked to them on the radio because they slid right by. That impressed my skeptical friends, even Chang.
You received orders from this hacker? Chang asked suspiciously. Why would UNEF assign you or us to this mission? We were in prison at the time. We're not a special forces unit. This doesn't make any sense.
They picked us because we were in the right place at the right time, no other reason. Look, Colonel Chang, UNEF is a unified command, but Hacker is U.S. Army, and you're not cleared for access. Chang was a good officer. I didn't like lying to him, to any of them. When we get to the supply base, you can get off this ship there if you want. This is a volunteer mission.
This mission is going to hit the Kristang? Desai asked.
Hit them hard, and they won't see it coming. If Skippy was telling the truth, all the Kristang would know is the wormhole to Earth suddenly stopped working.
Desai didn't hesitate. I'm in, sir.
Me too.
Adams agreed angrily, subconsciously touching her right bicep where I'd seen she had an ugly scar from the Kristang. The brief glimpse I'd had reminded me of an electrical burn. Chang considered for a moment, then gave me a smile that I couldn't interpret.
When he was told that an officer was brilliant and brave, Napoleon is supposed to have said yes, but is he lucky? Bishop, I don't know why, but you somehow have a talent for being in the right place at the right time. I'm going to trust you on this. I'm in also, whatever this mission is.
Great. I had 3 volunteers. All I needed was 20 more. 20 strangers who would be asked to trust me after our dodo fell out of the sky into their laps. I was going to need backup. Hacker instructed me not to give a full briefing until the team has left orbit, because if this op goes south, we can't risk the lizards knowing UNEF humans were involved. I'm going to trust you this far. If we're successful, we're going to shut down the wormhole that gives the lizards and the Theranin access to Earth. That means Earth will be back in Ruha territory, and too far from a wormhole for either side to bother sending ships. I saw how shocked everyone's faces were. I knew the feeling. This mission isn't about hitting the lizards. It isn't about payback. I watched Desai's eyes when I said that. It's about rescuing Earth.
Shit, Adams breathed softly. We can do that? You have a plan? Chang asked.
There is a plan, yes. We wouldn't have gotten this far without the means to hack into enemy systems, and one of those systems is the wormhole network. The rest of the short flight was without incident. While the autopilot was on, Skippy tried to familiarize Desai with the controls, and the rest of us explored the ship for anything useful. We cleared out 3 bins that contained hamster food to dump after we landed. You understand how to fly this thing, Desai? She looked up at me and held her thumb horizontally, neither up nor down.
Pilots have a saying, sir. If I can get it started, I can get it in the air. That's supposed to be a joke. Hacker explained the basic controls to me, but I would probably have crashed it if we weren't on autopilot.
Can you get us in the air again?
I did it once, she said without confidence.
The autopilot handled the landing perfectly, while Desai watched and pantomimed using the controls.
Damn it, the hamsters are here already, sir, Adams reported from glancing out the window. Six hamsters with rifles, waiting for us.
It wasn't surprising the Ruhar had occupied a major UNEF supply base. Over a Z-phone I said, Hacker, we have unfriendly company here.
Roger that, Planter. They're expecting a squad of hamster soldiers on your dodo. There are only six Ruhar on base currently. Be advised their weapons are now disabled.
Over.
Skippy was enjoying himself.
We started the rear ramp lowering as a distraction, then popped the side door open and the four of us poured out, guns blazing with stunner shots. All six hamsters went down quickly, completely caught by surprise. We kicked their weapons away and were tying them up when a group of unarmed humans approached us. Their leader was a female U.S. Army major. Sims, according to a name tag.
What the hell are you doing? We have a truce with the Ruhar!
I stood up and saluted.
Colonel Joe Bishop.
Yes, the Bonnie guy.
Man, that was getting old.
We're not fighting the Ruhar. We commandeered one of their ships. I pointed to the Dodo. And we need to load up on supplies, without stupid questions from the hamsters here.
Sims cocked a head. I was still wearing Kristang pants with black and yellow stripes, and my uniform top was still splattered with dried Kristang blood.
Adams and Desai were similarly mismatched, and wore rags instead of shoes. Chang's face was bruised, with cuts the Ruhar had hurriedly attended to. And I had two sprained fingers, maybe broken.
Colonel Bishop, sir, last we heard you were a prisoner of the Kristang.
They let me out early for bad behavior. It's above your pay grade, Major. We're a special forces unit. We need supplies and volunteers for a raid on the Kristang.
Raid the Sir? I haven't received orders from UNEF HQ about any special forces unit.
How did you hear about a truce? I asked.
I hadn't heard anything. Of course, I'd been in prison again.
She tapped a Z-phone earpiece.
Announcement from UNEF last night. We can't get through to confirm, and these Ruhar arrived here yesterday and rounded up our weapons.
Check your messages again. There should be orders for you to assist us.
Skippy was listening. If he was as fast and powerful as he boasted, Major Sims would soon have such a message.
Sir?
She looked up from her Z-phone screen, surprised.
I do have orders. How did...
Explanations can wait. We're on a tight schedule. How many people you got here?
62. Mostly Supply Corps. 18 of them infantry, of all nationalities.
Good. I need 20 or so volunteers, preferably with combat experience, for a special forces mission off-world, and supplies, weapons, ammo, food, medical.
Sims didn't appear to be totally convinced yet.
This is highly unusual. You're going to attack the Kristang, not the Ruhar?
Major, we're ground pounders on an alien planet that changes management based on who has the bigger fleet in orbit at the moment, and the part you think is unusual is a special forces mission? The orders you got from UNEF HQ, they contain the proper authentication codes, right?
Of course, Skippy had that covered somehow.
Yes?
Then you can get on board or get out of the way.
I turned to my companions.
Lieutenant Colonel Chang, Staff Sergeant Adams, check what supplies they have here. Get us loaded ASAP. Captain Desai, continue your flight,
It probably wasn't a good idea to use the word training in front of people who I hoped would volunteer.
Preparations.
She knew what I meant.
I paused a moment while Skippy spoke softly into my earpiece.
And these Ruhar rifles, I nudged one with my foot, are operational again, so we'll be taking them with us. Major Sims, assemble your people.
To her credit, Sims adapted quick. She gave me a crisp salute and trotted off, shouting orders. Within 5 minutes, most of the people on the base were milling around behind the dodo. I stood at the top of the ramp so people could see me. The base wasn't large, consisting mostly of two long warehouses of a type of precast concrete stuff, a couple outbuildings, tents for the humans stationed here, landing pads, and a single long runway. This wasn't one of the huge UNEF supply dumps that were clustered around the base of the space elevator. This was a regional logistics hub. It suddenly dawned on me that I had to give the speech of my life, and I hadn't prepared anything to say.
"Good morning," I said in a loud voice. "I'm Colonel Joe Bishop. Some of you know who I am.
For those of you who don't know me, I captured a Ruha soldier at my hometown in Maine, shot down two Ruha whales at the launcher, and recently was a prisoner of the Kristang because I refused their orders to murder hamster civilians. In this situation, a bit of bravado and reminding people why I was famous worked to my advantage. We thought the Kristang were our saviors, our allies, when they chased the Ruha away from their raid on Earth. We now know that the Ruha only hit our industrial infrastructure because the Kristang were on their way to conquer Earth and the Ruha wanted to sour the prize for them. You all heard rumors about fortune cookies from Earth. Well, I don't know what you've heard second or third hand, so I'm giving it to you straight here. The lizards are raping our home planet. I don't know if the Ruha are potential allies or neutral or as bad as the Kristang, but I do know this. The lizards are our enemies. That brought loud muttering from the crowd. When I was promoted, I went upstairs to meet the lizards. One of them got drunk and told me and Lieutenant Colonel Chang exactly what they think of humanity. The lizards think we're weak, that we're soft, that we're ignorant cavemen who are good for nothing but grunt work and slaves. UNEF had me planting potatoes because the lizards don't want to spend any more money on bringing supplies from Earth, because we're disposable. The lizards had me and Chang scheduled for a firing squad. The women. You've heard what Kristang think of females. Our women were tortured and about to be hanged when a Ruha raid freed us from prison. That remark caused Sims's eyes to harden and her mouth to draw into a tight line. I knew right then that she was sold on whatever I wanted. Adams came trotting through the crowd and up the ramp to me, giving me a firm salute. Supplies are thin, sir, but adequate. Good. I see you found boots. She glanced at her feet with a grin. And pants, sir, she added with a meaningful look at my baggy Kristang trousers. Listen up, people, I addressed the crowd again. This isn't another Ruha raid. The hamsters are here to stay this time. We have solid intel that the Ruha and their allies defeated a combined Theranin-Kristang battle group and that the Theranin are pulling out of this area. They're no longer supporting the Kristang effort to keep this planet. That means the mission UNEF came here for is over, and that we have no way to get supplies from Earth or get back to Earth. We're cut off. UNEF's new mission is survival. We plant and harvest crops, or we starve. Humans on this planet are farmers now, not soldiers. This being a logistics base, people here likely had seen the effects of our dwindling shipments of supplies before anyone in the field noticed. UNEF is putting together a rush special forces mission to hit the Kristang. We need volunteers. Some of you saw that the hamsters here were not able to use their weapons when we landed. That's UNEF. They have a way to hack into Ruha and Kristang systems. True enough. I was part of UNEF, and my way of hacking was to ask Skippy to do it. I had to be careful what I said about the mission. The Ruha would be questioning very closely the people we left behind. We commandeered a dodo and spoofed Ruha air traffic control systems so they don't see us. UNEF doesn't know how long this window of opportunity will last, so we're on a tight schedule. Here's what I can tell you about the op. If this works, we're going into orbit or beyond to hit the Kristang hard. Those people who come with us will get a full briefing once we've left the atmosphere. This is an opportunity to make a real difference in this war. If I had sprouted wings and flown into the air, people might have been less surprised. The combat mission here, I pointed to the ground, is finished. If you want an opportunity to hit back at the lizards, it's with us. I paused to check faces in the crowd. This was all too much, too fast. Not long ago, we were all blissfully alone in the universe, then Earth was attacked, and UNEF formed, and we were quickly whisked away to another planet. Until a few months ago, we thought we were performing well on a tough mission for our allies. Then the fortune cookies arrived and we discovered the Kristang were no friends of humanity. And after the big Ruha raid when I was at the launcher, we knew the Kristang weren't able to ensure our security on Paradise. Just yesterday morning, the Kristang were still firmly in charge of the planet. Now I was telling them that was over, permanently, and that UNEF was stuck here for a very long time, and that somehow, as a suspiciously well-timed miracle, I had a way to get us off the planet and hit back. If I was in the crowd listening to some joker telling me all this, I would have called bullshit on it. I could see people were shuffling their feet, whispering to each other, trying to decide what to do. A loud voice called out in Chinese, or I assumed it was Chinese. Chang had returned from the warehouse. Three soldiers in People's Liberation Army uniforms turned when Chang spoke. Right then I realized they might not have understood a single word I said. Chang made his way through the crowd to them. They spoke Chinese for a moment. Then the four of them walked to the base of the ramp.
Three more volunteers, Colonel Bishop.
That put me in an uncomfortable situation. I gestured him to walk up the ramp. Lieutenant Colonel Chang, this is a volunteer mission. I don't want you ordering people to go. What did you say to them? Chang blinked, surprised.
I told them this mission will be their only opportunity to do their proper duty and serve the people of China. They all volunteered.
Oh, what the hell? He told the truth. The mission was important, and we needed soldiers. Good enough.
Shit, Adam said loudly. Sir, we need to go to a base that has real soldiers and Marines, not these paper pushers.
Maybe my speech was good, and people were feeling trapped on Paradise and wanted a way to do something, and the crowd only needed an extra push. Maybe seeing all three Chinese join up motivated them. Maybe all they ever needed was a Marine to shame them into moving.
Oh, hell no. I'm not standing in line behind a jarhead.
Major Sims stepped forward. After her, we got a flood of volunteers. Of the 18 infantry, 17 volunteered. One had a sweetheart on Paradise and didn't want to leave him to the unknown future here. I took all 17 infantry plus three more. That made our ad hoc special forces unit 24 people strong. 24 people. And one shiny talking beer can. Chapter 11. Away Borders. Standing in the cockpit doorway while Desai ran up the engines to test for takeoff, I scanned the faces of our task force, or whatever they were. We truly had an international multiracial rainbow group. In addition to me, there were 9 U.S. Army, which included Major Sims, a sergeant, 3 specialists, and 4 privates. Staff Sergeant Adams was our lone U.S. Marine, and we had 1 U.S. Air Force sergeant who handled buzzard maintenance on Paradise. I figured she may come in handy if something on a ship needed fixing. 4 Chinese, including Lieutenant Colonel Chang. 3 Indian Army, including our only pilot. 4 Brits, including a sergeant. One of the British privates had taken flying lessons in a single-engine plane, so, logically, I assigned him as co-pilot to Captain Desai. He had looked terrified when he took the right-hand seat in the cockpit. Oh, and 1 French Army soldier, a Lieutenant René Giraud. Giraud was attached to a parachute commando unit, and was kind of like a French version of an Army Ranger. I'd worked with French special forces in Nigeria, and those guys are serious badasses. I was happy to have René on the team. When he signed up, he told me he wasn't sure whether my speech was a complete line of bullshit, but he wanted action, and there wasn't any on Paradise. I appreciated the honesty. 24 people hastily pulled together. 5 women, 19 men. 5 officers, 5 sergeants, 14 enlisted. 5 nationalities, which in some cases was a bit of a vague definition. One of our U.S. Army specialists was an Indian-American named Randy Putri, and if you looked at him, you'd think he belonged to the Indian Army contingent. But he spoke 0 words of Hindi, and he talked with the Cajun accent he'd grown up with in New Orleans. Our U.S. Air Force sergeant was named Chung, and she was Chinese-American. Chung did speak a bit of Chinese, but the little she knew was Cantonese, not Mandarin, so she couldn't communicate with the Chinese nationals any better than I could. Sergeant Reginald Thompson of the British Army had the dark skin of his Kenyan grandparents, but when he opened his mouth he spoke like Sherlock Holmes, or one of those upper-crust royalty on a BBC TV show. One of the other Brits had an accent so thick I wasn't sure at first that he was speaking English at all. Their slang is totally incomprehensible. Captain Desai, for some bizarre reason, seemed to understand his accent okay. She could act as interpreter if needed. On the subject of interpreters, Lieutenant Colonel Chang and one of the other Chinese spoke English. The other two were going to rely on their Z-phones as translators. Skippy, of course, spoke every human language perfectly. That annoying little beer can. 24 people, several nationalities, genders, specialties, and experiences. And I had to make them into an effective fighting force. Quickly. Without knowing exactly what the mission was. Most worrying was that not one of our 24 people was a medic. And the medical supplies we'd taken aboard were pretty basic. Things could go south real fast, and there wasn't much we'd be able to do for the wounded.
Captain Desai got us off the ground safely, and the autopilot took over from there, lifting the Dodo on its tail out of the atmosphere. Gravity gradually dropped away, and people adjusted, popping anti-nausea meds as needed. Hacker, had Desai reprogrammed the autopilot several times to avoid flying near Ruha spacecraft. There was a lot of traffic around Paradise. According to the cockpit displays, and Skippy whispering in my ear, we slid right through a Ruha frigate squadron without them investigating, challenging, or even noticing us. The sensors had been infiltrated by Skippy and instructed to ignore us. However he did it, it worked, impressively. When Desai reported that we'd exceeded escape velocity, left orbit, and were comfortably on our own in interplanetary space, I decided it was time to address the crew, who were looking anxiously at me. I floated in the cockpit doorway so everyone could hear me.
Full disclosure time, everyone. I couldn't brief you on our mission until we left orbit, because we can't risk either the Kristang or the Ruha knowing what we're doing. The truth is, I gave Adams a guilty look, I haven't been completely honest with you, for operational security reasons. Hacker is not a code name for a UNEF cyber outfit. Hacker is a... Here, I'll show you. I pulled Skippy out of my pack and made the mistake of holding him up for view without first looking at him. Big mistake. That smart-ass little jerk had transformed his surface from shiny chrome to a full-color imitation of a Bud Light lime can. I didn't know he could change his appearance, except for not having a pull tab on top of his lid and his bottom being almost flat. He could have fooled me. The faces in front of me changed in a blur from wonderment to amusement to horror, while I watched in my own horror as they realized they'd gone into space with a raving madman. A madman who had an imaginary friend in the shape of a beer can. No. I waved my left hand while frantically shaking Skippy with my right. Skippy, damn it, this isn't funny. Adams was bracing to fly across the compartment at me, and the look on her face was anything but friendly. Skippy, damn it, you little asshole. Skippy laughed maniacally and changed his surface so he was now a Coors Light silver bullet can.
Hidey-ho, everyone. I am Skippy the Omnipotent. You man, you should have seen your face, Colonel Joe. That was priceless.
I took a couple deep breaths, staring at Adams, who was still trying to decide whether to choke me. And for all his intelligence, Skippy is 100% asshole.
True,
Skippy admitted.
Is this better?
He reverted to featureless chrome. Chang fairly growled,
Who the fuck is Skippy?
You got some splaining to do, Adams said without a trace of humor. I noticed neither of them added, sir. I took a deep breath. This is Skippy. His code name is Hacker. I pointed to his shiny self. What looks like a beer can here is an artificial intelligence.
A very small manifestation of me in local space-time, Skippy interrupted.
Skippy, will you shut up a minute? An AI that was built by the beings we know as the Elders, or the First Ones, whatever they're called. The super-civilization who inhabited the galaxy before the Rindaloo, the beings who built the wormholes. They left their physical existence a long time ago, and they left behind the Sentinels. And they left this AI, who was millions of years old, an immensely powerful AI. He released the controls on this Dodo. He disabled the Ruha's weapons. He is right now masking us from the hamster sensors and transmitting the proper IFF codes to the Kristang. He is how we are going to board and capture a Kristang ship, do the same thing to a Theranan star carrier. Then we're going to disable the wormhole near Earth so neither the Ruha nor the Kristang can have access to our home anymore.
Holy fucking shit, Sims breathed in disbelief.
Yeah, that was my reaction when I was locked up in a warehouse by the Ruha and a beer can on a dusty shelf started talking to me. Adams wasn't convinced.
Sir, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. We're trusting our future and the fate of humanity to a talking beer can.
And when you put it that way,
a super smart, nay, impossibly inconceivably smart, talking beer can, Skippy protested.
Adams, forget what Skippy looks like to us. You saw what happened back at the warehouse.
The Ruha couldn't use their weapons, but we could. That wasn't me. It wasn't UNEF. It was Skippy here. Skippy hacked into this dodo so we could fly it. That sure wasn't me, and it wasn't UNEF. We just boosted out of orbit right through the middle of a Ruha fleet, and they didn't see us.
Skippy has hacked into the Ruha sensor systems and instructed them to ignore us. No way could UNEF do any of this.
Skippy is the ultimate weapon, our ace in the hole. And humanity for sure, by God, needs an ace right now. With Skippy, we can disable, shut down, turn off the only wormhole that allows the lizards access to Earth.
Adams wasn't convinced.
How do we know this isn't a trick by the lizards? That this AI isn't working for them?
Adams, if you can think of anything, anything at all, that the lizards would gain from helping us escape from the Ruha and steal one of their dodos, please tell me, because I can't think of anything.
Skippy is going to build our trust the same way we're going to build his. By doing, one action at a time. He got me, you, Chang, and Desai out of prison, and now we're off the surface of paradise. If we were by ourselves, we'd still be trying to figure how to open the door on this thing. I pointed to the dodo's deck.
I did consider maybe this is a Ruha trick to get us aboard a Kristang ship. Maybe the hamsters planted a bomb on this thing, this particular dodo. Again, I can't think of why the Ruha would go through all the trouble. This war has been going on for a very long time without humans involved. They don't need us. The lizards, the hamsters, the Theranin. None of them need us primitive humans for anything. Maybe this is all an elaborate ruse for some reason we can't see. Okay, maybe it is. Or maybe Skippy is telling the truth, and we have a chance to shut down the wormhole that gives the lizards access to Earth. If there is any chance that is true, any chance at all, we need to take it. We'll know whether we can trust Skippy when we have control of a Kristang warship. It's as simple as that.
Skippy had remained uncharacteristically silent the whole time I'd been speaking. Part of being super smart is knowing when to keep your mouth shut and let the other guy talk. Chang, who had remained silent but had been exchanging increasingly tense looks with his three Chinese soldiers, cleared his throat.
"Colonel," he said with emphasis, "we volunteered for this mission without knowing the details. I expected the plan was to attack the Kristang. Now you are telling us that our mission is to save the world? To rescue Earth from the Kristang?"
It sounded so dramatic when he said it that way.
"Yes. Yes, we're going to shut down the wormhole that allows the Kristang access to Earth. The situation will go back to the way it was before the wormhole shift." I assumed everyone had heard the rumors about that by now. "Earth will be all by itself in the middle of nowhere, and this war will go on without humans."
"Save the world," Sims repeated incredulously.
"That's the idea," I nodded. "I know it's kind of a cliche, but..."
"No, save the world works for me," Sims said thoughtfully.
"Shit, is this real?"
Chang clicked his Z-phone off and spoke briefly to his three soldiers in Mandarin, then turned back to me.
"Colonel, I find all this difficult to believe. However, not long ago I was stationed at an army outpost on the Mongolian border. Now I am in an alien spaceship 1,000 light-years from home. What is possible has been redefined so many times that I'm prepared to accept almost anything. So if this mission has even a small chance to free our planet from the Kristang, we will do our utmost."
Damn, his English was better than my own.
"Thank you, Colonel Chang." I scanned the other faces.
Giroux gave a Gallic shrug.
"We're going to kill Kristang, no? I am in, as you say."
Sims and Adams exchanged a glance.
"Oh, what the hell. Sure. Us too," Sims declared.
"Colonel, this is it, right? The whole truth? Everything? No more surprises? We're allied with the talking beer can to shut down the wormhole? Now that we're out here, I expect the need for OPSEC is out the window."
She looked meaningfully at the airlock door.
"If that expression can be used in space."
I nodded. "You know everything that I know. I can't promise there won't be more surprises, but there'll be surprises to me, too."
"Why us, sir?"
Sergeant Thompson asked in his oh-so-proper British accent.
"Why not bring this Skippy to UNEF HQ and let them sort it out? Send up a proper special ops force, SAS, all that."
Chang and Sims both made a disparaging snort at the same time.
Sergeant, Chang said, UNEF would first take a week at least to figure what to do. Then, because they are risk-averse, they'd likely turn our AI friend over to the Ruha, or the Kristang, whoever is in charge of the planet at the time, in hopes of gaining favor. It wouldn't matter anyway. Once this became known at UNEF HQ, there is no way it could be kept secret long. The hamsters and lizards would know about it quickly.
Also, I added, we have to go now to take advantage of the situation. The Ruha are busy consolidating their hold over the planet. Ships are jumping in and out overhead, and there's still a remnant Kristang force hanging around. If we wait, the Kristang will pull back, and then we'd need to raid the Ruha to capture a ship. The Ruha have too many ships here supporting each other for us to sneak away with one.
Right. Thompson seemed satisfied. One more question, if I may. Why is the AI called Skippy?
From the nodding heads around the dodo, that seemed to be a universal question.
Because, I held Skippy in front of my face and scowled at him. As I said, he is super smart, super powerful, and a super asshole. He wanted to be referred to as the Lord God Almighty, so I named him Skippy to remind me what a shithead he is.
Guilty as charged, Skippy said cheerily.
He doesn't mind being called, Skippy? Adams asked pointedly.
I don't mind being called Skippy. You don't need to ask Colonel Joe. I am a person, Skippy said. No, I don't care what you pack of flea-bitten monkeys call me.
Monkeys? Putri asked.
U.S. Army Specialist Randy Putri, not Private Asok Putri of the Indian Army. I know it's confusing for me, too. I was going to break military tradition and call them by their first names in the future.
He thinks he's being nice by considering us monkeys, I explained. To him, we're all bacteria.
Ah!
Skippy scoffed.
You aspire to be as smart as bacteria.
Right then, Thompson said flatly.
This bugger is a proper arsehole.
Adams stuck a tongue out at Skippy, which is a gesture I never expected from her.
What's next, sir?
I inwardly sighed with relief.
Skippy, can you load schematics of likely Kristang ships on everyone's Z-phones and also show it on the display here?
Done, he responded simply, and the display on the bulkhead behind me came to life.
This is a typical Kristang frigate, the type of small ship that most likely will be sent in to pick us up.
A real colonel was responsible for command in a brigade-sized force. That meant planning offensive and defensive operations of several thousand soldiers, including all the training, logistics, communications, and coordination with air power, artillery, and other units in the area. Making and executing big plans involving thousands of people and enormous firepower. A real colonel had training, formal and practical education, and years of experience before assuming command. I had none of that. What I did have was hard-earned experience in small-unit combat, experience in the bush, and more importantly, villages and towns of northern Nigeria. Taking a Kristang ship was small-unit combat, and I figured clearing a ship compartment by compartment was similar to fighting house-to-house and room-to-room. The U.S. military used to call that type of warfare military operations in urban terrain, and military bases across the USA contain fake villages for training troops how to fight in such confined spaces. During the Cold War, these fake villages were set up to resemble Eastern Europe, with signs on streets and buildings in a vaguely Slavic or Germanic language. Recently, the focus has been on the Middle East, and we soldiers gave the training towns politically incorrect names like Hajistan. Whatever the name or the grand scenario the towns were built for, they trained soldiers how to clear an area building by building and room by room. The type of fighting where you often couldn't see who you were shooting at, and calling in Apache gunships meant pulling back quickly so the Hellfire missiles didn't hit your own troops. To plan our attack and provide hasty training to our crew, I assigned Lieutenant Giroux. Chang, Sims, and Desai were senior to Giroux in rank, but Chang's experience was in artillery, not infantry. Sims was a logistics officer, and Desai a pilot. You might figure that Sergeant Adams, as a Marine, was the logical person to plan an operation for boarding an enemy ship, which would have been a good thought, back in the War of 1812. The U.S. Marine Corps was a little rusty on the whole away borders thing. That left me and Giroux as infantry officers, and Giroux was French Special Forces. What he knew about small unit tactics and what I didn't kind of scared me. Special Forces guys were hardcore.
I kept having to remind him that our assault force was not the elite special forces killers he was used to working with, and that we'd be operating in zero gravity, with no training, and with people we mostly didn't know. We decided that we would largely have to wing it in our attack, because there were too many unknowns. What I intended was for me to lead a force to capture the ship's control center, which was aft of the bridge on most Kristang ships, while Giraud's group captured the engineering section before the Kristang there could damage the drive units or reactor, or even self-destruct the ship. That plan was universally shot down by everyone involved, including Skippy. "Colonel," Adams declared, arms folded across her chest in a gesture that was not easy in zero gravity. "You can't go racing around the enemy ship. You're the commander. You need to remain behind in command."
"She's right, Colonel Joe," Skippy admonished me. "I can tell you where your people and the Kristang are and what they're doing, and I can control parts of the ship. But I need someone to tell me what you want me to do, and where your people should go. My genius doesn't include coordinating a troop of monkeys in combat. You know what your people can do, and, more importantly, what they can't do." After protesting that my experience was at the fireteam and squad level, and that Giraud would be a better candidate to remain with Skippy and coordinate the attack, I was forced to concede they were right. In the end, the unspoken factor that decided the issue was that I was comfortable with Skippy, he was comfortable with me, and no one else wanted the task of dealing with the twitchy alien AI. Giraud made our crew mentally run through a simulated attack on a typical Kristang frigate, using Skippy's best guess of where the Kristang aboard would be and what systems aboard the frigate he could control. It surprised me when Skippy said he couldn't seize total control of the frigate's computer systems, at least not right away. The Kristang very deliberately and carefully had built their ships to prevent the possibility of an enemy remotely hacking into their computers, on account that they were afraid of their patrons, the cyborg Theranin, doing exactly that. Because the Theranin had done that before, and the Kristang weren't going to fall victim to that trick a second time, or, as Skippy reported, more like the 100th time. The Kristang had gotten better at hardening their computer systems from intrusion, but their technology was still far enough below the level of the Theranin that the Kristang weren't yet capable of even imagining some of the technology the Theranin routinely used. Fortunately for us, Skippy's technology was as far beyond the Theranin as the Theranin were beyond humans. Or, as Skippy, of course, said it so tactfully, a tree full of monkeys. The key to the whole plan was that we needed to literally plug Skippy into the ship to establish a physical connection to the ship's network for him. Once he was in, he'd have access to the whole ship and could download a subroutine of himself into control nodes all over the ship. But first, we needed to locate what was basically a wall jack aboard the frigate and plug a Z-phone into it. Fortunately, the proper cables and connectors were aboard the Dodo. Unfortunately, getting to the wall jack closest to the frigate's two landing bays was going to be a bitch, and Skippy's trick of disabling weapons, like he did with Ruha rifles, wouldn't work with the Kristang, because the Kristang didn't trust that type of technology, and the rifles mostly did without fancy computer chips. Giraud's plan was to throw the entire boarding force of 22 people into the effort to establish a physical connection, after which our crew would split into two groups, one led by Giraud and one led by Chang. With Giraud, I assigned Sergeant Thompson, while Sergeant Adams was going to Chang and the Chinese sergeant. I could see people were totally keyed up, completely understanding that jacking a Z-phone into a data port was life and death, not only for us, but potentially for all of humanity. Rousing speeches were not needed. I ordered everyone to eat and drink something and relax. Giraud agreed, adding that he wanted the crew to memorize the layout of typical Kristang frigates and destroyers, which helpfully each came in only two major types. "Picture the layouts in your mind," he advised, "over and over, and over and over again, and then repeat, until it became instinct ingrained in your spatial memory." "I think we have as good a plan as we'll get," I told Giraud as we both ate a Hua energy bar. The waiting, with the Dodo coasting away from paradise, hoping to get picked up by an enemy warship, was wearing on everyone's nerves. Giraud gave an exaggerated shrug. "Plans are a start, no more." "No plan survives contact with the enemy, right?" "Von Moltke said that." I'd learned that from the army somewhere along the way. Giraud wrinkled his nose. "Von Moltke learned that from Napoleon.
Napoleon emphasized having flexible capabilities and exploiting opportunities on the battlefield, instead of trying to stick to detailed plans. He pointed to Skippy. No plan made by UNEF could have anticipated this opportunity. There was no place for privacy aboard the Dodo, except for the single zero-G bathroom that was in steady use. When Skippy pinged me that he wanted to talk semi-privately, I went forward to the cramped cockpit to float behind the right-hand seat. "What is it, Skippy?" he replied into my earpiece. "Just wanted to say something nice for a change, and I don't want to be overheard because that will ruin my street cred." Street cred? Where the hell was Skippy getting his notions about human culture? "Oh, sure. I didn't know what else to say." "Your species is remarkably adaptable. The ability to accept new information, new concepts, to not run away screaming or become paralyzed when confronted with shocking changes, is unfortunately too rare among intelligent species. I expected there to be trouble when you revealed the truth about me and our mission, but your people accepted the new situation admirably quickly." "Huh." Skippy wasn't taking into account that our crew were soldiers. Soldiers get new crap thrown at them in the middle of a mission all the time. One time in Nigeria, I was in a Blackhawk skimming the treetops at 0330, headed to raid a camp of bad guys, when our lieutenant gets a call 10 minutes out from the landing zone. The bad guys reached a deal, and they were suddenly on our side. Our mission then was to protect our new buddies from a force of other bad guys who were sneaking through the jungle to kill them. Apparently the first group of bad guys had been declared traitors by the other ignorant wackos because they weren't as fanatically crazy as the craziest of wackos. So we landed and set up a perimeter to protect guys we'd been shooting at the day before. Of course, the whole thing had really been a tribal dispute, and both sides tried to ambush us. After we evac'd, we had to call in the Air Force to resolve the situation diplomatically with napalm, cluster bombs, and fuel-air explosives. When things change, even radically, you look at your buddies, shake your head, shrug, and adapt. That's what you do as soldiers. Civilians get upset when the menu changes at Applebee's. "Don't get me wrong. There are plenty of your species who lack the ability to process new facts and adapt. But with humans, those are mostly old people. Their brains no longer are able to process new information, or they're just lazy. But with some species, even the young have difficulty with facts that conflict with their rigid belief systems. I am impressed with humans. There, I said it. So we're not just bacteria? Don't push your luck. You're bacteria with potential now." 37 minutes later, an alarm sounded in the cockpit. "Excellent," Skippy reported. "Two Kristang ships jumped in, a frigate that is sending us a homing beacon and a destroyer." "Where?" I asked anxiously as Skippy displayed on the bulkhead screen our position relative to Paradise, the two Kristang ships, and various Ruha ships. "I have loaded a course into the nav system." "Got it, sir," Desai confirmed. "Hold on tight, everyone. Engaging autopilot." I hung on as the Dodo's engines roared and we surged ahead. "Skippy, how far? How long until we rendezvous?" I repeated, an anxious eye on the display. There were a half dozen Ruha ships that were uncomfortably close. "The Kristang frigate is accelerating to match our course. We will meet in 3 minutes and 6.36749 seconds, approximately." "Approximately." Adams and I exchanged an amused glance. "Huh." Skippy gave a good imitation of a grunt. "That was good navigating by the lizard pilot. They jumped in about as close as their technology allows. Got to be luck. No slimy lizard is that smart. Colonel Joe, it is going to be close. Two Ruha ships are preparing short-range jumps to intercept the Kristang frigate. I couldn't conceal the lizards jumping in, or the Ruha would realize something is wrong with their sensor systems. Do they see us?" "No, they're tracking the frigate. The Kristang destroyer is moving to provide cover for us." "Great. And you're sure that once we're aboard the frigate and it jumps away, you can spoof the frigate's nav system so we'll jump to a different location than the destroyer?" "What? No. I told you I need to physically jack in first before I can establish any sort of control of the ship." "Duh. Weren't you listening?" "Holy shit. Skippy, what the hell? You said you could..." "I said that I could make whatever ship takes us aboard jump to a different location than any ships that are escorting it."
Yeah, and? Don't you need to...
Oh, you're cute, Colonel Joe. You think I need to hack into the lizard's computer to screw with their jump drive? No way, dude. I'm going to distort space-time at the last picosecond so their jump drive field skews off course.
You can distort space-time? Sims asked incredulously.
Uh-huh, yeah,
Skippy answered flippantly.
It's sort of a hobby. I tried collecting stamps, but messing with the universe is so much more relaxing.
Sims lifted an eyebrow and gave me a look that silently told me she understood now why I named the little shithead Skippy. The frigate grew closer on the display until it suddenly was right there, looming on top of us, with the docking bay door already open. Skippy let the frigate take control of the Dodo's nav system and guide us aboard. The bay door had only begun to close when the frigate jumped away.
We need to move fast, Skippy urged. We just jumped, and I threw us off course. Now I'm preventing a jump field from forming. The Kristang know something is wrong, for now they think the problem is their jump drive. That's not going to last long.
The bay doors closed agonizingly slow, and there was a roar as the bay repressurized. As soon as the air pressure indicator read 80%, we opened the side door and the back ramp. My ears popped, and I felt a stabbing pain that was difficult to ignore.
Camera is under my control.
It's working, Skippy said.
They're buying our story. Outer door is now unlocked.
Skippy took control of the light sensors in the docking bay camera and was feeding a false image to the ship. He was also chatting on the radio with the bridge crew. What he meant by our story was that the false image the Kristang crew saw through the camera was exciting and tempting. A Kristang Special Forces team coming out of a captured Ruha Dodo with a very special item of ancient Elder technology that supposedly had been found on Paradise. It was, according to Skippy, a bubble energy tap, a device that pulled free energy from fluctuations in quantum foam, or something like that.
It's a crude technology. Think of it as a battery that never wears out. Trust me, this will impress the stupid lizards, Skippy had explained.
Anyway, it worked. The bridge crew unlocked the door to the interior of the ship, and we flew across the bay in the zero gravity. Only a few people missed the target and had to be pulled in before they bounced off the wall and floated away. Because Kristang frigates had small crews, and Skippy determined this frigate was short two regular crew members, there was not a crew member at the docking bay when we came in. The bridge crew told Skippy they were sending someone down to meet us. The rest of the crew were busy frantically trying to determine why their jump drive wasn't working. Giroux, in the lead, got the outer door of the airlock open. It was a simple matter of pressing a button, then pulling a lever. Inside the airlock, I held Skippy in one hand and jacked the plug into a port in the airlock, while Giroux followed a sequence Skippy had taught him on the airlock's control panel to force open the inner door while the outer door was still open. That was a dangerous moment, with both doors open. An alarm would sound that even Skippy couldn't squelch yet. The inner door slid open with a bang, and a loud alarm began blaring. The 22 people of the assault team squeezed through the airlock into the corridor as quickly as humanly possible, and as soon as the last person was through, I bashed my fist into the button that caused the outer door to slam close and cut off the alarm. That was the signal for Desai to get the Dodo moving, and for our assault team to split up and head toward the bridge and the engineering section. The most important task was mine, to plug Skippy into a wall jack that, for a panicked split second of eternity, I couldn't find. In my defense, I was floating upside down near the ceiling trying to keep out of the way of the assault team, getting bumped, elbowed, and once, kicked in the face. We were all awkward in zero-G. None of us had training in zero-G combat, and we hadn't any opportunity to practice. Aboard the Dodo, I'd made everyone except the pilots practice flipping around, controlled landings on a wall, pushing off with feet and hands. There was not room enough or time enough in the Dodo for anyone to be confident they could do much more than not puke when they spun around. Finally, after an impossibly long 2 seconds, I spotted the wall plug. At the same time, gunfire rang out forward. The Kristang on his way to the docking bay had seen the forward assault team. From the sound, I recognized the buzzing of Ruha weapons and the heavier report of a Kristang rifle. Then only buzzing. Ignoring distractions, I pulled myself down the wall, took the plug out of my teeth, and carefully inserted it in the wall jack. Are you in?
Busy,
was Skippy's only reply, and considering his lightning-fast processing speed, that concerned me. Then,
I'm in. We're good. Ship systems are in my control.
ejecting docking bay doors. There was a shudder as Skippy used an emergency procedure to blow the doors outward rather than retracting them to the sides. We couldn't wait for them to cycle normally.
Dodo is on the move. The ship lurched violently, bouncing me off the wall. Skippy said he had control. The ship should not have been able to move.